There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesbendell, and I'm your host. On today's program, how consolidation did in commercial radio and the scary future that may lay ahead for this venerable medium. My guest is Jerry Del Cagliano, former editor of Inside Radio Industry Newsletter, and now the author of the Inside Music Media blog. You will want to hear what this radio veteran has to say about the medium we love. Do stay tuned. Jerry Del Cagliano is a radio veteran with over 30 years in the business. He used to author the Inside Radio newsletter, which went out to people throughout the industry until it was bought out by Clear Channel Communications. He saw the industry go into consolidation in the 90s, and he sounded the alarm, although very few others were listening. Since that time, he has gone on to consult with others about the radio and music business and has been a clinical professor of the music industry at the University of Southern California. Right now, he's been blogging at InsideMusicMedia.com, where on a daily basis, he has been explaining in gory detail the moves and missteps that have caused the likes of Clear Channel, Cumulus, and other big radio owners to be traded as penny stocks or to be taken over in private equity deals in order to forestall a possible inevitable bankruptcy. And also talking about how radio missed the boat with the internet generation and how it might be able to catch up. So to start with, Jerry tells us a bit about his background in the radio industry.
Still a need for radio, though? I mean, is there...
Assuming that we get the right track. All right. Let's try that again.
Well, you know, I'm a lover of radio. When I was a kid, rock and roll radio was coming of age. And that's all I ever really wanted to do. I went to college to take broadcasting, but I got into television for a couple of years in Philadelphia and, believe it or not, preferred radio. So I had a career on the air in a number of good radio stations with a number of interesting people, legendary programmers like Mike Joseph and Jim Hilliard and Paul Drew and Dick Carr at WIP in Philadelphia, Metro Media at the time, Mel Karmazin was now head of Sirius XM. So it was a real interesting thing. I programmed two stations in Philadelphia. I went on and started a business called Inside Radio, which was a publishing venture that adapted over the many years that I owned it to a changing industry. And it wasn't until the end of that I began to see the radio industry morph into something that was scary. And that was around the time of consolidation. I was out of tune with a lot of my friends who thought consolidation would be good for them because they could be a program director of more than one or two stations and they could make more money. So the company paid them more money to take on more work, but the company saved by not having as many people. And that's when it began. Now here we are today, consolidation all those years later. taking our eye off the listener. The internet comes along, the iPod comes along, social networking comes along, file sharing comes along, sociological changes, a generation comes of age, the millennials. And meanwhile, you see radio executives acting the same way they did 12 years ago when they were consolidating. So my background comes from a lover of radio, a participant in the business, an observer. And I spent 4 years teaching at the University of Southern California. And one of the things I did was generational media, which helped me rethink where we're going and make me take a look at why I thought that I would think the exact way radio people think today if I hadn't had that experience of knowing the next generation the way I got to know them. We need to be more like Steve Jobs at Apple, and we need to be able to understand the people that we are building products and or services or formats or whatever for. And so I started a blog called Inside Music Media for my students, and it was not for the industry, but my friend Bill Tanner, a legendary program director and a wonderful guy, used to come out to the campus and sit in on classes with me, and he started spreading the word around that I had this blog that you ought to read because it's really real. And from there, it's grown into right now about over 80,000 visits a week, and I write one piece a day about the things I think you and I are going to be talking about today.
Right. So let's look back at Inside Radio. This is an industry newsletter, an industry publication. When did you publish that?
Well, it's been around for a long time. I started it in my house when I was between jobs. I didn't know that it would be something that would turn into something as influential as it turned into. And it's been many things. In the beginning, it was a news publication. It was mailed once a week. It became a commentary. Then it went back to being news. And then I got the idea of maybe faxing it out. And then we started adding advertising to it and began updating the news every day in a way that had never been done before. And we gained traction with that as well.
And how long did you publish Inside Radio?
27 years.
So you watched as an industry reporter, as an industry analysis, the change here, and you referenced the consolidation era. So you're talking about roughly like 1996 with the passage of the Telecommunications Act, which radically deregulated radio ownership.
And you know, I never considered myself a reporter, and apparently other people didn't either. Now, I never considered myself a reporter at Inside Radio. I always thought of myself as a program director. I still feel that way today. Many of my friends are program directors. I love them. I love program directors. We deal with content, and we deal with audiences. And so when I did Inside Radio, I didn't see it as it was a trade publication. It may have been viewed that way, but I looked at it as being, you know, this is a program director here talking to you about an industry from a different perspective than somebody that was hired out of journalism school.
And what did you see then in the mid-90s, and how did you reflect that in Inside Radio?
Well, I must tell you that I am not shy. So I saw consolidation coming. Any idiot could see it. I mean, it was on its way. What we didn't know was going to happen, his duopoly preceded consolidation. What we didn't see was the extent to which the NAB would sell out the mom and pop operators for the powerful and get this Telecommunications Act of 1996 passed. Once it was passed, it enabled groups to purchase large numbers of radio stations in cities and virtually monopolize those cities. That's how you got a J-Corps, that's how you got an AM/FM, that's how you got Clear Channel. If you told me back then that these guys from Texas, Lowry Mays and his folks, would turn out to be the largest radio group when all was said and done, I would never have believed you. It was unthinkable. I remember we had some pretty good broadcasters, Cap Cities, ABC. I mean, you had mom and pop operators who who owned 7 AMs, 7 FMs, and who were installed in their markets, institutions. Radio was a big deal. And the enabling legislation came along. It was the perfect storm for a hurricane, because then you got the radio industry consolidating with Wall Street enabling it. And what happened here, in my view, is investment bankers didn't just, and you've got to go back to that time, there's a lot of money around, they didn't just look at this industry and say, we want to be in it. They looked at the industry and they said, we got to run the prices of these stations up. I mean, they've got to be worth something. So they overpaid, you know, $100 million for a radio station, even in a big city, is just not warranted. It wasn't then, and to be honest with you, it's even less so now. So part of this screwing of America took place by running the prices up, being willing to pay huge prices, and a lot of people got out and made a lot of money, so I'm happy for them. But you had an industry that grew up with a handful of consolidators who owned just about everything that's worth owning. It was awful. And so they put it all on their credit card, as we've now found out. And over the last 12 years, anytime it got a little tight, they'd just go out and refinance it and give better terms to the lenders. Now they can't do that as easily. Now some of these companies are teetering on the brink. And the lenders don't want them, because radio is really not a growth business anymore. Some people get mad at me when I say that, but it's not for a lack of love of this industry. If they think that, they would be sadly mistaken. I just told you, this industry's meant everything to me. But if you want to keep it real, it's fatally injured. And it was injured, in my view, at the time of consolidation, and that's when I called them out. I also did other things prior to that. I mean, I can remember attacking this thing called satellite radio. I never thought it would work. I never thought it was any reason to have it. Expensive technology, took a long time to get it launched. And what are you going to get? You're going to get music channels without commercials and some other interesting channels, and you got to pay money for it. And I don't think it has worked.
So in Inside Radio at this time, in the late 90s, you were calling out the Clear Channels, you're calling out and identifying consolidation as a problem.
I was an equal opportunity caller-outer. Yes, I would call out whoever I thought was ruining a good business, and I frankly didn't like it. And I told you honestly earlier in this conversation that even my friends didn't agree with me. And some were miffed. How? What do you mean? Give it a chance. You don't understand. And so some of us had a breach because they were happy. They were happy to be taking on more jobs and making more money. What they couldn't foresee was that someday someone would say to them, you're going to do the jobs for less money. Then someone else is going to do the job. And then we're going to do the station from elsewhere and not have anybody do the job. That's where I think they were short-sighted. I think they would agree with that today. So at least a lot of my friends who objected back then do agree with my representation of it, you know, after the fact.
But then what happened with Inside Radio?
Well, I sold it. I sold it to Clear Channel as a settlement to lawsuits that we exchanged. Clear Channel was not too pleased with me. They eventually, when Randy Michaels was running it, filed a $100 million lawsuit against me. And personally, and my company. And I think I surprised them when I filed a $125 million lawsuit against them.
What were they accusing you of?
Well, all sorts of things, including RICO, racketeering, and things like that, which were dismissed from court. Mm-hmm. But remember, this is Randy, and Randy is he's a program director. We're all from the same brethren. We know that. We know... You got to remember back in the days of your program director, folks who listen to this will know that I'm correct, but back in the days when program directors fought each other, you know, they would do all sorts of unscrupulous things, like I've heard putting a note in the mailbox of your competing station's program director telling his wife that he's having an affair with somebody at the radio station. This is not good. If things like this had happened, if I said they didn't, then my nose would be growing, and I would be Pinocchio. But so it's an industry that was really not ready for prime time, and so a lot of this stuff went on, and we had these lawsuits, went on for a couple of years. And, it's all public record now. A couple of months before trial, it was settled, as many lawsuits are, and in the settlement to get me to drop my suit and for Clear Channel to drop theirs, they wound up buying Insider Radio as well as settling the suit. So that meant that I would have to take some time off for non-compete. They bought the asset, and I got the money. And then I went to teach, and I really owe them for that, because teaching at USC has meant everything to me. And as I often say, Lowry Mays and should have sent his own sons to teach, spend some time with the next generation, and they could learn what they forced me to learn by not allowing me to be in the business for 4 years, which was that the business was over as we know it, and that it has changed at the hands of new technology and new sociology.
And Lowry Mays was the CEO of Clear Channel, who eventually handed off the company to his two sons, who oversaw much of the latter consolidation era.
I believe Lowry had some health problems. I'm not sure what exactly, heart, stroke, something like that. He became somewhat disabled, though he's survived. But then Mark took over, his son, and Randall, his other son. And then they eventually took the company private through the acquisition firms of Lee and Bain. And so they got another payday in the process, and I believe the Mays boys are still involved with the project. However, they preside over a company that is tremendously weakened, that could very well see bankruptcy by the end of the year, in an industry that they lead, and their idea is to take it to what I call repeater radio, which is local radio stations that really aren't local, where there are news hubs, a couple of places in the country that feed news where they need it to certain stations in their group, where syndicated programming is used instead of local programming, where local program directors are not needed, where some stations only have a handful of people for the whole cluster. And that's the business they led, that they presided over, and I think it's a travesty.
And all of this happened really quite quickly. I mean, it is now only 13 years after the Telecom Act, and much of this consolidation happened really by the beginning of the 2000s.
Yes, and it's fascinating. I mean, I think it happened earlier in terms of, I really do think that it was deleterious to the industry to happen when it happened. Let me make my case for that. The internet really, you know, how many people had email in 1996? I mean, how many people, we know what social networking was, there wasn't even an iPod. I mean, you know, I think they began to dig their own grave, the radio industry, long before we actually saw the evidence of it. And we saw the evidence after 2000. In fact, when I sold Inside Radio in 2002, the industry was in pretty good shape in terms of earnings. But after 2002, I think some of the things that I mentioned to you before, the technological and sociological changes, the coming of age of a generation with 80 million people in it who don't like radio, who don't need to listen. They can hear music to their heart's content online. And that began to happen because in the last couple of years, radio companies have all they can do to show zero growth in terms of revenue. And then the recession. And when the recession came, zero growth would be a great year. Instead, some cities are doing, I understand Los Angeles is 35% down from a year ago.
Wow.
And it's not uncommon to see 15 to 35% in terms of the declines. It's fair to point out to my friends who are in small cities that smaller market radio stations are doing better, oddly enough. That doesn't surprise me, and it doesn't surprise them. Maybe it surprises the big consolidators who had all the answers to this radio industry of theirs. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that radio was never meant to be consolidated. It isn't a big business. It is a mom-and-pop business. It works best as a small entrepreneurial operation. Even back in the days before consolidation, I can hardly name a company. I don't know if I can name a company, ABC, CBS, NBC. Even they didn't have full complements of AM, FM, and TV stations. So, you know, it was a business you got into because there was prestige or because it made sense for your business plan or because you wanted to own one. I worked for people who loved the radio. They didn't necessarily make money, but they loved being in the radio business. So this artificial hyping of radio as being worth 14 times more than it's worth in order to create a false high value for the asset is what's gotten them into trouble today. Since they put it all on their credit card, good luck. Enjoy themselves. Meanwhile, everything that I said before is still operative. We still have the iPod, now we have the iPhone. And we not only have music downloading, we have file sharing, we have legal sites that really aren't doing that much business. It's easy to get music for free online. We have social networking, and, you know, without Facebook, I mean, you know, just take a look. Twitter, we are living in a world that has been taken over by a generation that radio went out of its way to ignore while it was consolidating. And there is the fatal flaw.
Why did that happen? Looking backwards, you know, I guess I can understand the greed, especially when it looked like there was no ceiling to how much money could be sucked out of the radio business. But why the way in which they, as you say, that they entirely ignored and missed a whole new generation? Why did that happen in your view?
Here's the answer. And, you know, in your infinite wisdom, you hit it right on the head. The same thing that's wrong with our world and wrong with New York, meaning the financial capital of the world, the country, is greed. And they never bought these stations to operate them. In fact, there's not a day that they operated them well. They bought the stations to build them up. They were hoping for a second wave of deregulation that never came. So they got a little antsy after that. You'll notice they didn't sell anything. They really weren't buying anything. They were hoping for that second round of deregulation. And the honest-to-God answer, in my view, is that they weren't in it to run it. They were in it to sell it, build it up and sell it. And by the way, what do venture capitalists do anyway? They buy, cut, build, invest, and sell for a profit. This is just another example of that.
So what you're saying is what we see in radio is something which we've all seen in real estate, in effect.
We see it everywhere. You can't get away from news online, on your phone, on television, radio, whatever, newspapers, if you still read them. You can't get away from what's happened. It's greed at the highest level. They've trashed a perfectly good industry. And what's really dangerous is what's happened in the last couple of months with Clear Channel, your leader, doing what I call repeater radio, importing programs from their, what I call CENTCOM, Central Communication Command, and cutting jobs left and right. That's not local programming. And, you know, it's a bad time to be doing it because in Washington, the sentiment's going in the other direction. Michael Copps and the new FCC, when it's installed, is talking like they want to make localism an issue again. Well, hell, if you make localism an issue, Clear Channel's a bad operator. So is Cumulus. So is Citadel. So are most of them, because they're operating to taking their lead from the leader. That's why you are a leader, when the leader in the field. And there's an old saying that says, the speed of the leader determines the speed of the pack. And your leader is Clear Channel. They own huge numbers of radio stations.
But now the leader is looking more like Jim Jones than General MacArthur.
Well, they always offered Kool-Aid. The question is, what flavor do you want? And they're all drinking it, and they're all following Clear Channel's lead. So when Clear Channel finds a way to do repeater radio, Citadel finds a way to do repeater radio. Cumulus decides they're going to do everything from Atlanta. And but this isn't localism. This isn't even right. This is not even, living up to your fiduciary rights of a licensee in an individual market. And this isn't going to help the sale of your station. You're never going to get your money from them if the industry goes under. And I don't think the industry's going to come back. People get mad at me when I say this. I should be a cheerleader, but there's so many cheerleaders in radio that they don't need me. I love this business, but I am not going to lie about it. This business isn't coming back. You can't have a growth business without the next generation. And I'll tell you what I learned at USC. They were raised without radio. They were raised stopping, starting, time delaying, and deleting their content. They had access to a wide variety of music that you never will get on a radio. If you put a radio on a cell phone or on an iPod or on an iPhone, they won't listen. Because there are generational differences that we never bother to take the time to learn. Steve Jobs, a baby boomer, looks like a baby boomer, sounds like a baby boomer, acts like a baby boomer, but boy, when he does his products, he builds them for the next generation. He understands the sociology, not just the technology. And in our business, we still think, well, you know, if you put a couple of liners here and you change this here and you put this music on there and you call it something, maybe invest some money in promotion. You got a new format. No, you don't. It's over.
Well, Jerry, I really appreciate you sharing both this history and your insight about radio and the future of content, really, of mediated content.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Jerry DelCagliano. He's the man behind the blog InsideMusicMedia.com, talking about the medium of radio.
You can hear more of my conversation with Jerry DelCagliano at the Media Geek Radio Show website at radio.mediageek.net. And you know, there's often not enough time in a radio show to get everything in. So you can hear more of my conversation with other recent guests like Daniel Gilfillan, author of Pieces of Sound, German Experimental Radio, and Alec Foge, author of the book Right of the Dial, The Rise of Clear Channel and the Fall of Commercial Radio. That's all at radio.mediageek.net.
And that brings to a close this edition of Media Geek. Tune back in one more week for news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at mediageek.net. And the radio shows at radio.mediageek.net. Send any comments to paul@mediageek.net. Check out my new group blog along with Matthew Lassar and Jennifer Waits. It's radiosurvivor.com. All about radio and the survival of this medium. radiosurvivor.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.